Welcome to Within the Realm. I'm your host, Steve Garrett. At this show, we believe there's a story behind everything, and it's all within the realm. I bring you stories from within my realm about the world around us, how those stories shape us, and how we shape the stories. Some years ago, I was involved in political campaigns, and it was something time-honored in my family. Working in politics, you can develop good friendships. One of those friendships for me was with a guy named Rick Farmer. He's now Dr. Rick Farmer. He'll cover his bona fides in the interview. He was an early expert on the subject of legislative term limits. Currently, 15 states have placed term limits on their legislators, and there have been calls for term limits on members of Congress for years. With ever-increasing interest in draining the swamp, I thought the time was good to have this conversation with Rick. And I'll put in a few of my own thoughts after the interview. But for now, we'll focus on Rick's research and experience. I caught up with him at a noisy coffee shop in Bethany, Oklahoma.
Tell me that you're eminently qualified to talk about term limits.
Well, I earned a PhD at the University of Oklahoma. I did my dissertation on term limits in the Oklahoma legislature, did all of my research there at the Capitol, and then I went to the University of Akron and I earned tenure at the University of Akron. While there, I continued to work on the term limits issue. Ultimately, I was the editor of two books that have chapters that are about term limits. One is called The Test of Time, so it was the second one that we did, and it was after term limits had gone into effect in a few states. And so we were able to examine what effect that it had. The one before that, the initial one, was called Legislating Without Experience. Legislating Without Experience book was sort of a forecast of what was likely to occur, because we put the book together before very many states had any experience with term limits. But The Test of Time was a book that we put together about 4 years later, when actually several states had term limits and we had some data that we could look at. Not a lot of definitive data, sort of some early data, but we had some data. You know, I should make one quick point here. So as a political scientist, I kind of have a minority view, and I would say moderate view, but a minority view of term limits, in that most political scientists who study in this area are people that you might call institutionalists. They're very interested in the institutions of government, and so they're very interested in Congress or the state legislature being effective, and they see putting limits on those institutions as a problem. And so most political scientists who study term limits would point out all of the bad things that they can find about it. I personally think that that's bias. I think that if they took a more objective view, they would see that there are good things and there are bad things, and that many of those things are two sides of the same coin. So, for example, you could say that you lost all your institutional memory. You could also say that you got new blood and new ideas. Guess what? Those two things are two sides of the same coin. And I think that, well, it's just important for me to offer the disclaimer that my voice is a moderate or minority voice in the political science community, because most political scientists would not agree with my take on it.
What was the first state that enacted term limits for legislators?
Oklahoma.
And when was that?
1990. So the way it worked was it occurred at a general election in November, so no one was affected until the next election came around. And then they had 12 years that followed that. So 2004 in Oklahoma. So we were one of the last states to implement it, but we were the first state to enact it.
Term limits for office holders is nothing new. Any president is limited to serving two terms. Many governor's offices across the United States have a similar limitation. I asked Rick what he thought the appeal of term limits for legislators was.
I think for voters, it's pretty simple. I don't like politicians and I can put limits on them. I think it's as simple as that. There's a lot of speculation about some long-term legislators who sort of became the icons of, these are the people that we need to get rid of. One particular senator, his name was Gene Stipe, was in the legislature for about 50 years. But actually, I did a survey of citizens of Oklahoma City, and I included some questions about term limits on that survey. And I specifically asked them about Gene Stipe. And that did not turn out to be a statistically significant finding, which was probably frustrating to me and everyone else who said Gene Stipe's the reason. I can't rule out that Gene Stipe was the reason, but I was unable to prove that Gene Stipe is the reason. And other people like Gene Stipe, people who've been there for a long time. I think for voters, it's pretty simple. I don't like politicians. I get to put limits on them. I'm for it. I think it's pretty simple.
What do you think that the effects of term limits has been on the legislative process?
I really think in Oklahoma, they're relatively minimal, and in part because we have 12-year limits. So in some states, you have six. In Arkansas, they had six for a while. A lot of chaos there. In California, they had six for a while, really very chaotic in a huge state like California to have six-year term limits. But actually, in Oklahoma, before we voted on term limits in 1990, the average tenure of a legislator was about 8.5 years. So there was only a few of them that stayed a long time. Most of them served 4 or 6 years and they left. So what term limits did, basically, it decapitated the legislature. It took out the leadership. It took out the committee chairman who'd been there for a long, long time. But everybody else, you know, just sort of went on. And so it did create some turnover at the top. Some of that was healthy. No question that some of that was healthy. But by the time you've been there for 8 or 10 years, you know, you're ready to take on leadership role and then you're ready to move on. So I think it's been relatively minimal, actually, in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma this year, we have 47 new House members out of 101, almost half. Now, they're not all because of term limits. We had many incumbents who decided not to run for re-election. We had several incumbents who were defeated, sort of an unusual number, a high number of incumbents who were defeated, plus term limits. And so you put all that together, you got almost half the House are new. Most of those people on November the 8th, when they got elected, couldn't have told you how a bill becomes a law. I mean, they took that in high school. They may have heard it again as a freshman in college, and they haven't thought about it since. So just to know how to do their job, big learning curve, with some really tight deadlines. Like, they had to have an idea of what bills they wanted by December 1st, and that's a drop-dead date. And they didn't get elected until the first week of November. So big learning curve, which means that everybody has to work really hard to get them up to speed. A lot of new staff has to be hired, so legislative staff, you know, 47 new people, so there's a lot of new staff to be hired, a lot of staff who's looking for, am I going to get hired by this guy or that guy or not have a job? Just a lot of chaos. And I think the same would be true whether you're talking about in Congress or whether you're talking about at the city council, especially in those initial years, but anytime you have a year with big turnover. But it's relatively short-lived. I mean, you work through it, and then you're ready to go again for a while. I guess another thing I would say about term limits is they create kind of these bubbles, and over time those bubbles should attenuate. They should work their way out. So in 2004, Oklahoma had about half of its legislators were new because of term limits. So you could predict that 12 years later, you would have a whole bunch of those people leaving, except that a lot of them, I mean, the average tenure was 8.5 years anyway. So a lot of them didn't stay for the full 12 years. And so that bubble was already kind of declining, but you got this bubble that kind of hit in 2016 because of the people who came in 2004. And I guess you could predict that there'll be another bubble 12 years out, you know, 2028. There'll be a bubble in 2030 because of the 47 people who got elected this time around. But those bubbles work their way out as people don't stay the whole 12 years.
Rick taught several years in Ohio, and while there, term limits on legislators was enacted. I asked him about that state's experience.
Ohio had 8-year limits, and they took effect in 2002, so they took effect while I was in Ohio. There was a more chaotic, turbulent period there because the speaker, the person who got elected Speaker of the House, was a sophomore. He'd only served one term, and he was only going to be able to serve a couple more terms, and then he was going to have to be gone. And so that created a certain amount of turmoil. A lot of states experienced some turmoil in the first couple of years, kind of as they transitioned, but once they kind of got it ironed out, it worked out for most places.
What do you think term limits would do to Congress?
Well, at the moment, it seems to be unconstitutional. You know, there have been a lot of proposals to impose term limits on members of Congress, but we just can't seem to get there. I think if you had a longer, if you had a long term, you know, 12 years, 14 years, something like that, the effect would be similar to what you've seen in Oklahoma. Relatively moderate effect. Take out some people who've been there for a very long time, but allow some time for people to grow and learn their job before they have to take over and run the place. You know, I think it probably could be beneficial. If you make it too restrictive, if you went to 6 years or eight, you probably would have too much turmoil. A lot of political scientists would argue that term limits weaken the legislature and empower the executive. And so if you applied that thought to Congress, you might be empowering the president in some ways, because Congress wouldn't be as capable of responding. It wouldn't be as capable of handling their duties, and so some things would just fall to the president.
In Missouri, the argument has been it's weakened the legislative branch and empowered lobbyists.
I tend to disagree with that for a couple of reasons. So first of all, almost all of that claim is based on self-reported survey kind of data. Like, who do you think is being empowered? And people always say, well, lobbyists are being empowered. My observation is, first of all, in Ohio, when term limits first kicked in and a lot of legislators left, we had lobbyist firms calling our university saying, do you have any students we can hire? We need to hire people. Why do you need to staff up your lobbying organization? Because there's too many freshmen and we don't know them all, and we've got too much work to do. We can't catch up with all these people. You know, a big part of lobbying is about relationships. And if those relationships are gone, you're ineffective, which means you got to work your butt off. Actually, I think one of the effects of term limits is that everyone has to work harder. The staff has to work harder. The leaders have to work harder. The press has to work harder. The executive has to work harder. Lobbyists have to work. Everybody has to work harder, because before, they all knew each other and knew what to expect, and now they've got all these new relationships to build.
Do you get a better product because everyone's working
harder? I think you have to work harder to get the same product.
Is that a negative?
I think the general public would say, oh, now people have to work. How? Well, you know, what's wrong with that? You know, yeah, that's a downside. You have to work harder to get to the same result because these relationships and institutional memory are gone.
Opponents to term limits often make the argument that each election constitutes a potential term limit, that voters can limit the power of the legislature every 2 years. I asked Rick to comment on that argument.
I don't believe that elections are rigged, but the fact is that about 90% of incumbents get reelected, and they get reelected because they have huge advantages, lots and lots of advantages. And that just makes it really difficult for a challenger. So an incumbent, first of all, they have name ID. When a voter goes in to vote, if they look at the ballot and they don't recognize a name, they're not going to vote for that name. They're going to vote for someone that they recognize. Well, incumbents have name ID. But incumbents also have the advantage that they have been voted for. The voter has chosen to support them in the past. And so it's not like a clean slate. I'm going to choose between these two people. It's like, oh, yeah, I voted for that guy before. I think he's doing a good job. I'll vote for him again. And there are many, many more advantages. I mean, I have a whole list of them. But because incumbents have so many advantages, the argument for term limits is that basically the only way you're going to get new ideas and new blood is to put a cap on it.
What would you say to someone who says that you've actually gone from having a two-year term to a term for that period? Because some political activists will say, oh, well, he's going to term out in two cycles. Let's just wait till then.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a danger. But actually, we've shown in research that competition has increased. What happens is once someone's been in office for, if you got a 12-year limit and someone's been in office for six or eight, then a potential challenger would say, well, I'm going to wait for that to be an open seat. Why would I run against that person? But actually, they do that without term limits. It doesn't. That's not having that much impact. But what term limits does is when the incumbent is removed, now you got five people running for that seat instead of one or two. You know, one instead of having one opponent, you got a primary on both sides. Those people who are running are for the legislature, are county commissioners, city councilmen, mayors, and so now you got an open seat at the county commission, and now you got six or eight people running for county commissioner. The legislator who is term limited out, if they are a career politician and they want to have a job in politics, they're going to run for governor or Congress or state treasurer. And so now you've got 20 people who are leaving the legislature all looking for a place to land. Suddenly you got candidates running for all these other jobs. It actually increases competition, and we've actually been able to document that. If somebody who's sitting in the legislature and might want to sit in the legislature for 20 years suddenly needs to find a different elected job, then they come back and run for county commissioner. Now you've got competition for the county commissioner seat, and you've got competition for the legislative seat. So we've been able to document that it increases the competition. I think the drive for term limits was citizens saying, I don't like politicians, and I get to put limits on them. And then a benefit of that would be that it increases competition at every level. So, you know, those of us who like to sit around and think about these things have made up all kinds of reasons for why voters supported it. And probably we had all kinds of reasons why we were for it or against it when it was up for discussion. But it's not that complicated in voters' minds. Yeah, I think the public hasn't really seen a reason to change their mind about it. I think a lot of these issues that are really simple in the voters' minds, if you wanted to persuade them otherwise, you would have to get their attention and give them reasons to think otherwise. And mostly they're not paying enough attention. And so it's difficult to explain these things to them. And I think that term limits is still pretty popular. I think it's probably still pretty popular all over the country.
So do you think that those people that went to the polls in 1990 and voted for term limits are satisfied with the end result?
You know, it's hard to say, because I think voters are not satisfied with the direction of the country. And I don't mean that as a criticism of this specific administration. In fact, they probably voted for this president 2 years ago because they're not satisfied with the direction of the country. Probably not very satisfied with the direction of their state, whichever state it's in. So in Oklahoma specifically, you know, we had a teacher strike, and we had big problems at the health department and just a number of issues. I don't know what the right track, wrong track number is that you would get from an Oklahoma pollster, but my guess is people are not particularly satisfied with the state, but they blame politicians for that. And term limits are a way to limit politicians. I don't think people would make the connection that maybe somehow term limits are the problem. I think people see politicians as the problem and term limits as a solution to politicians.
My thanks go to Dr. Rick Farmer for spending time with us discussing this issue. I believe he's presented a lot of information to ponder here. One statement that he made stood out to me. That statement was this: one effect of term limits is everyone has to work harder. He mentioned legislative staff, lobbyists, and the press among the many groups whose efforts have to be increased in order to achieve the same product. One group was left unmentioned: voters. If we believe legislatures are to represent the people, the work needs to start at the voter level. Isn't that what a republic is all about? Any topic hinging on politics is one that's bound to stir up some debate. I'd like to hear your input on the topic. You can contact us at our Facebook or Twitter pages at Within the Realm, or email us at contact@withinpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Within the Realm. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or other podcast channels. You can find a full archive of our previous episodes and show notes at our website, withinpodcast.com. You can interact with us on social media at our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts. You'll find additional info about the show and other helpful features. If you like this show, I'm sure you know someone else who would like it too. Be sure to share this episode with them today. The show was produced by me with audio assistance by Alex Garnett of Alex Garnett Audio. Our theme music was provided by 556 and a half. And as always, thanks for listening.